friends and family, it's time for Mio Ayo, a safe place for self-discovery. Here is your host, owner of Mio Ayo Counseling Services, Christy Shaw.
Good morning. My name is Christy Shaw, and I'm from Paiute First Nation. My mother's from the Métis community in Librette, and I am an Indigenous social work graduate from the First Nations University, and I'm now a mental health therapist through NIHB. And my goal, I guess, in this profession and in this journey is to empower people to understand themselves, share with them some of the tools and some of the things that I've learned along my healing journey, and especially the tools that have been helpful through my education journey in Indigenous social work. And then I guess the other side is the some of the spiritual aspects. That's probably why I don't call myself a mental health therapist, because it's not just about what's going on in the mind. It's about what's going on in the heart, in our bodies, in our environments, and in our communities and things like that. So it's a bigger kind of, I guess, view of what I hope wellness to be and how I can share that with the people that I'm around. Hello everyone, my name is Christy Shaw. Welcome to another episode of Mio Ayo, Improve in Health. I am your host, and I am a registered social worker and mental health therapist. And I'm here with my co-host, Will Yuzichbi.
Hello, Christy. Welcome back to Okanese Podcast Productions. Yeah.
Yes, thank you for having me over here again. It's another beautiful day out on Okanese. I always like coming out here.
Mm-hmm. Busy, busy, busy. We got students, our summer students kicking in now. So it's good. It's fun to get some students in here. And as mentioned before, I found that mentoring keeps my sales going, and bring the students in. It's just the freshness, the excitement, the exuberance. It's contagious.
It is contagious. Yeah. And it's kind of fitting because of what we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah. When you mentioned this, I thought, for sure, things, you know, if you want to preface this by saying, like, again, generationally, my generation was so different than yours, mm-hmm. and then, which is, again, totally different from the students of these days, right? And what used to be working when I was growing up is totally changed now, mm-hmm. you know, good or bad. I'm glad I didn't have so much social media when I was growing up.
Mm-hmm. So much evidence of pictures.
Exactly. Yeah. A little evidence out there, but yeah. And you know, even I guess grandparents are, you know, what do? How do we connect with this new generation? And even parents are going, how do I connect with my child? Who, as we've talked about on episodes before, have the phones and social media such prominence in today's generation as opposed to yours or ours from the past? Because it seems like it's just going so fast.
It is.
Right? And a lot of parents, a lot of single parents are finding hard to find their way and how to keep that connection rolling. And I guess that's a theme we've been kind of going with our past couple of podcasts here. But today we're going to zero in on, I guess, what are we calling this new generation?
The new adolescents.
The new adolescents. That's good.
I think it's important to identify that it's totally new. Like you had touched on a few of the things that we're going to cover today, but there's such a disconnect, and the youth are feeling it. Although I will say I've helped to raise my nephew who's 19 now, and my daughter's 9. So I will be, of course, incorporating a lot more of, I would say, when I'm talking about these things, I bring a lot of my personal experience, mm-hmm. and I've tested these things out. So I'm not theoretically approaching the subject of, well, this could theoretically work. I'm approaching this as I've tried this. This is what's worked for me. This is something that may be helpful for you too, because we have to be, I guess, real and honest about what it is that we're talking about.
So, that's right.
And yeah. I think you too, you bring in your personal experience, and we're going to touch on actually experience in general and how that can help people to feel more connected rather than disconnected.
And as we say, information is knowledge, right? What might work, some things might work, and some things, hey, that works fine. And that's the first step.
Absolutely. Yeah. So yeah, my nephew is my first experience in dealing with this new adolescence. And it was really hard for him to talk about anything other than, you know, video games and that sort of thing. But as he got older and got into high school, that disconnect became even bigger because he had lost that kind of innocence and wonder of the world that we got to share. And now I think it was that he was approaching life and the realness of life and becoming an adult. And so him and I didn't connect as often. And we did have a few issues of serious mental health problems, not so much with him, but actually his peer group. That he didn't feel comfortable talking with me about at the beginning. But we navigated our way a little bit haphazardly. So again, I'm sharing honestly. But we got there, and that's really all that matters, is that at some point we were successful and we got there. I think the other thing too is we tend to think as parents and as caregivers in whatever form that might be, aunties, uncles, grandparents, cookums, mushums, that we're going to have this one grandiose moment where we can say the most perfect and right thing and the stars will align and everything will be okay. And unfortunately, we could wait a really long time for that to happen. Maybe when we're really, you know, in a good place, present. And I think what I've realized is that it's really not about those moments or waiting for those moments or hoping that, you know, I'll be able to get one of those moments. It's about really, really small choices, very easy choices to do these things and to practice some of these tools that is going to help to build that connection and presence between you and your kid, whether it's, you know, a little kid and a younger person or up to teens and adolescents, of course. But today we want to focus on the adolescents, right? Yeah.
And as always say, personally, I respect everybody on their healing journey, no matter where or what you are, no matter who you are, where you're at. But also, what we give is advice. You can take it, you can say whatever. But sometimes, if you identify with one thing, that's all it takes, right? And like you mentioned before, it's not a matter of you set goals and you have visions, what have you. But it's if you're thinking, oh, this is what it's gonna like. We're gonna sit down. We're gonna talk. We're gonna every day, it might not be that realistic, right? Mm-hmm. But it's those little moments that make it worthwhile. And again, I'm talking from experience because I missed out on that with my kids because I was too busy doing the rat race and I again separated from who I was and where I was come from. I was for lack of a better word, I was colonized, right? Mm-hmm. I had to go to work, had to pay the bills, had to do this, that, and I lost track of my family. Right. But I'm blessed that they were watching me and they saw, oh, dad's working. He's providing because that's what they're doing now. Mm-hmm. Right. And like that old saying is that, you know, raise your kids right and then you get to spoil their grandchildren.
Yes.
Right? And that's the point I'm in now where I can sit back and I can bring my granddaughters over and sit with them and listen. Mm-hmm. Right. And I'm grateful for that because I missed out on that. If I can go back, then I would be more, it wasn't that I wasn't involved. But I don't think I was involved from a loving father point of view, if that makes sense.
Totally.
Right? Because looking back now, there is a big difference between being a dad and being a father. Mm-hmm. Right? A father is there to, in my opinion, be there to provide. He's there to do this, do that, that, like my father was and like many strong First Nation men before me. Right? But then I was able to see, or I guess I was able to come back and go connect to that loving side, which, for lack of a better word, whether it be addictions, whether it be residential school, myriad of things growing up lost that, that connects us, right? And I say it again, I'm so glad that I was able to connect that again, right? Because that makes things much more meaningful. Mm-hmm. And again, a word we've mentioned before is meaningful. So again, when we get back to talking about these new adolescents, I think it's all about meaningful, like, meaningfully making that connection because that's what counts, especially. And you got to realize too, these adolescents, there's so much more things going on in their world, in their own personal world, from the time they wake up until the time they go to bed. And parents and caregivers got to be in there somewhere,
right?
Got to be in there somewhere.
Right.
It's I don't want to say it's a have to, but it kind of is, and it's got to be in a good way, right? And I think that's kind of how we're going to move into this with that aspect. So from my personal point of view, sometimes you're thinking, oh, it's too late. Mm-hmm. But it's never too late. Mm-mm. It's never too late, right?
Absolutely not. It's never too late. And I think you touched on a lot of like really important things, which is it's the meaningful connection, because a lot of times it's easier to have a bit of a superficial connection because we're not present in our own bodies and in our own lives.
There you go.
And I will say that, you know, between my daughter and myself, this is something that we've finally kind of learned, which is how can I be present with her? And there were some hard parts that we had to get through between our communication. And I think, you know, when I was reflecting back, you know, there was a lot of times where I was afraid to connect with her and ask her what was wrong, because I was worried about the answer. I was worried that she was going to say, I'm a terrible mother and I've done all of these things wrong, or, you know, maybe remember something that I had tried to forget. And our conversations have been very, very deep. There has been some trauma from a past partner that she's been able to share with me now. And, you know, I'm working through that. But it was almost like now that we went through that communication part, that difficult part, the communication of everything else is so much more present. And we don't, you know, just kind of get frustrated and walk away, because there was an elephant in the room that, you know, we both weren't ready to maybe talk about, but we finally did. And so now the communication, the respect has gone so much better. And so I think maybe that's sometimes what parents or caregivers, grandparents, maybe that's sometimes what that is that difficulty of mm-hmm. of saying what it is. So maybe I won't try to oversimplify it, but I will say for me and my daughter, that was a really helpful part. And it did create closeness afterwards. Like mm-hmm. we loved, respected, and trusted one another so deeply that nothing can break our bond now. Mm-hmm. Not even each other.
mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Exactly. Even each other, for sure. Hey, for sure. That's for sure. So, okay. So we've prefaced the podcast. So,
yeah.
So as a parent, as a caregiver, where do we start?
Okay. So I want to talk maybe about, we're going to do two things. We're going to talk and cover a little bit about what are the things that our young people are dealing with now that most likely you and me haven't dealt with in the past, because I think that's really, really important. Mm-hmm. I guess in the seriousness of maybe what this podcast is going to be for youth. The second thing we're going to talk about, and even more so probably in a bigger way, which is what are some tools, some very simple tools that are probably going to be really obvious to you, but we got to sometimes talk about them and flesh them out, that you can use as a parent and as a caregiver that are going to help you to connect and communicate with your youth. I think the other thing that we're going to do is, and this has also, again, been very helpful for me, is we're going to talk about some of the phrases that we often say.
Okay.
As adults, and oftentimes we are, even with our friends, you know, even with anybody, and my Kokum is the same way. It very rarely will she like connect with what I'm saying. She wants to give advice, so it distances her, right? So if you think about being a little person, how can a little person intellectualize advice? They can't do it the same way as a mature brain. I can, mm-hmm. right? When she gives me advice, I'm like, I can take it or leave it, or you're missing that part, Kokum. But as a young person, you got to kind of maybe put yourself in a little person's shoes or a teenager's shoes, is how can they intellectualize the advice that they're given?
I guess that's where the storytelling came in first, right? Mm-hmm. For the youth, instead of saying, here's your moral of the story, just like, here's a story. See what you can pick out from it.
Totally.
Right.
Teaching them how to think for themselves and take what they need. Mm-hmm. Such a powerful tool. You're right.
Definitely.
So some of the things, and maybe Will, you might have a few to add, that adolescents are facing that are different than us. Well, we talked about cell phone lots. We were just starting with computers when I was a kid.
Okay.
And it was mostly all regarding music. Like, how do we burn a CD? That's all we cared about.
Sure. Okay. Napster.
LimeWire. You just wanted to have the best CD burnt. Yeah.
Make sure you didn't download a virus.
Yeah. Exactly. And then it slowly started to get into like the chat room stuff.
Okay.
But I was too busy wanting to be with my friends rather than being on a computer, because I'm very outgoing and talkative. negative. So I, you know, my experience might be a little bit different than those that were more introverted and maybe kind of went into the virtual world a lot sooner.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And look, with my generation, it was the first advent of the computers. Right. Mm-hmm. When they first came out, they were expensive. They were like thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't really that powerful. But it was touted as the wave of the future. Everybody's got to have a computer in their home, personal computer. Right? And eventually everybody did. But then as tech grew, like, gosh, in the past 30, 40 years, like, tech has just blown, exploded. A computer, like the original IBM computer was the size of a huge room.
Mm-hmm.
And it really didn't do a lot. But it was huge. And now we have devices that are 100 times more powerful that we can just hold in the palm of our hands.
Yes.
All right. So taking that route, you can understand how being born in different generations has different effects, right?
Yeah.
So with me starting off with a computer, just a PC at home, and saying, oh, that could do, right? And then from the PC moving into the workplace, mm-hmm. right? And then, oh, I got a PCs at work now. And then the industry, like my industry, went from 45s and LPs to MP3s to digital to streaming.
Right.
Right? So that was all in my career.
Mm-hmm.
Like I started, we were still playing 45s. We were still playing 8-tracks, for heaven's sakes. Right?
Yeah.
And before the show, you'd have to take an hour and physically pick every record, every CD,
right.
and then play it sequentially from one CD player to the next, back and forth. And that was the art of radio, mm-hmm. right? And then went from there to MP3s, where we programmed it. And then from there, we went on to streaming, where we didn't even need the big transmitters and all the big stuff, mm-hmm. need, right?
Mm-hmm.
Before, we used to go on location, we'd have to take all this equipment, a big van load of stuff, a big event. And now, like even within my generation of being in the radio, we just roll in now with a laptop and a mic.
Right.
And we're done. It's like there's no more big equipment to haul in. We used to have like assistant engineers who would come with us on location, who would set everything up.
Mm-hmm.
And then, okay, well, there you go. As we might just roll in. All right, cool. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, now it's like, no, Will, you take that equipment, you go set it up now because it matters. Plug into A, B, done, turn it on, and we're broadcasting live.
Right.
Which is easy, but I don't know. There used to be a certain, I guess, feeling of putting all this stuff together.
Confidence.
Maybe it was an ADH thing on my part, right?
Maybe but, that too.
But it was really cool to put all this equipment together and then do the big show and then take it all and put it. Now it's like, done, we're here, we're done. But again, now if say a new generation of radio doesn't understand queuing up a record, playing a 45, a record player, for heaven's sakes, right?
Mm-hmm.
They look at it, what was that for? I was like, oh yeah, it used to be called vinyl. Huh? Right, and then from a professional point of view, you have to pass those on so that they understand how the industry came to be.
Right,
right, and in a personal life, you kind of have to do the same thing with the kids in regards to, and again, in my opinion, this is kind of stuff I pass on to my granddaughters is family traditions, mm-hmm. Protocols, of course, mm-hmm. you know, basics, anything that you want them to remember,
mm-hmm.
right? But again. That comes in time. I'm at that point now where they say, mushroom, and I say, yes, what do you like? Right away. But there was a time when they were kind of, can I ask that about? Does mushroom know that? Can I ask them that question? Right now, they're freely asking questions, right? So again, it's a matter of finding the time.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that's and meaningful time.
Meaningful
time. Because there's stuff that goes on while you're doing dishes or while you're making supper. There's conversations, right, that just kind of pass time. But then there's a meaningful conversation when they ask you something mm-hmm. specifically, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, all right, I gotta get good,
yes.
good answer for this one, kind of thing.
Well, and like what you had identified there with the equipment and the hands-on learning and the technical skills that were needed. Now it's very different. It's very much press this button, press that button.
Yeah.
You know, put some things on, but there's not a lot of textile, tactical learning. And to me, I think it makes a lot of sense because a lot of youth and young people, you know, I think if you compare the two, even my generation to my nephews, and we're not that much different, I would say in age, or maybe I'm just making it up in my head that we're not that much different. Maybe
I don't feel that much
in his eyes there is. but that confidence level is not the same. Whereas like if I approach something, if I don't know how this microphone it's not working, I have the ability and the confidence to say, well, I'm just going to work backwards, right? And do a little bit of troubleshooting and look for the cord and where does the cord connect and all of that. But because youth aren't learning that same way necessarily, unless they get some specialized extra tutoring and mentoring, and it's all on the computer, you know, how do you build that confidence in being able to handle a problem when it comes to you, when you might not have actually done it hands-on yourself? Right. You might have seen it online, right? You might have seen or heard somebody talk about it, but to physically actually do it, I think is a really big confidence booster that a lot of youth don't have that opportunity to do the same way that you or I had.
Yeah.
And I think that that bleeds into other areas of their life, right?
And like that's, and also like a more positive note, like me growing up, listening to the radio, it's like, oh, that's so cool. I get to do it all the time. But now a lot of youth have that access that they can do that with their phone, with with podcasting, with going live on social media. And it's almost like I want to tell you how to do that properly to get your message and your communicate properly with social media. Because I've seen really, really good posts, and I've seen other posts that have a great message, but it doesn't go anywhere because it's not communicated effectively.
Totally.
Right? Yeah. And I think that's kind of how you're talking about, whereas right now everybody has access to go live. But to go live effectively, right? Especially if they want to do their own communication, covering an event or just going live with something, that's great. That's perfect. That's that's what social media is all about. You know, just sharing your, but if you want to share your opinion, right? It has to be like, it has to be presented a certain way. And I think that kind of access, or that, you know, with great responsibility.
Yes.
Yeah, with great access comes great responsibility.
Totally. That's exactly it, right? Yeah. And so we as parents and caregivers and protectors and teachers of the next generation, you know, I think we totally missed that whole step only because technology just grew so fast that we were just ready for the next cool thing.
Like riding that wave.
Totally.
We're not controlling it at all. And what it's come down to now is that a lot of the stuff that we didn't have access to, like readily access to, is now available to this young generation. Yes. They just have to text and bang, it's there at their door.
Yes.
Right? We're talking obviously about the negative effects, right?
Yes.
We're talking alcohol, we're talking drugs, we're talking, and again, I've talked about this before, like in my generation, it was alcohol and it was weed, it was marijuana, right? Now, that's no longer the case. Like now it's heroin, it's
well, synthetic
opioids,
prescriptions,
fentanyl is in
are
everything.
Even available to order online.
Yeah, even above ground medication with a prescribed person, a doctor. You don't really have to go and talk to them anymore. You can actually just email and say, "Oh, by the way, here you go, boom, bang." And it's, and like I said, that and again, that kind of access in my generation was not controlled, but it was watched, right? And now that watch is gone. Right?
Let's take a moment and just think about, because this is really good. Let's say you think back to when you were a teen. Would you have been able to effectively and responsibly manage that easy of access to things?
Probably not. No, not at all.
I don't, like, even for me, I'm like, that's way too much access for me. I don't have the ability to think about those things in a constructive, critical, healthy way.
Like even in my generation, having the access that we did was kind of scary looking back.
Mm-hmm.
But to be having that kind of access these days to the stuff that is out there, it's like, it's scary. It's like, I just got a chill down my spine thinking that my granddaughter, who's only 7, but within 3 years, all that is going to be accessible to her.
And there's even issues just with like graphic materials online, graphic pornography, you know, the dark web is a whole nother ball of wax that I'm not too familiar with, but I know that it's there.
Yeah.
And I know that there's really dark things that can be shared on there, you know, in terms of abuse of people, abuse of animals, you know, it's just the worst thing of
even the way something is portrayed to them, right? That if it's their first inclination of the subject, that's what they think it's all about. And that's the difference between journalism and social media, right? Journalism, you have industry standards. You have certain things that when you hear something from a journalist, you know it's the truth. Mm-hmm. But they don't have that on social media, mm-hmm. right? You only have people saying, in my opinion, this is what it's, somebody says, well, this is that. And if you don't know, then you're taking that as gospel, right? Mm-hmm. But in reality, it's not really. And even some of the topics that come up are presented like it's true. It's breaking news. This is happening. But mm-hmm. in reality, it could be just AI. Mm-hmm. It could be just somebody just for starting a fire, right? Mm-hmm. But you have to have that ability to filter it.
Yeah.
Right? And I hope that a lot of our teens, our adolescents have that ability to look at it objectively and mm-hmm. say, is that real? Mm-hmm. Maybe I should ask somebody about this instead of posting it or reposting it blindly, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And I know there are others who just, I know there's adults who just blindly repost and I say,
yes.
Did you read that?
Mm-hmm. Did you read the fine print on that?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, artificial intelligence images too is something that's quite common. And mm-hmm. and I think, you know, a lot of young minds might be confused about what that is. And it's just bottom line, too much.
Yeah.
It's just too much. And so I think instead of what, you know, can happen when we're kind of covering all of these issues, we can get very, it can give us a lot of fear as parents and caregivers, like yeah. fear-based. And that is also not the way to approach this subject. So okay. I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the tools that we can use okay. That are going to help us to have the courage to talk about these things, but not just the courage, but the effectiveness, I'll say, to talk about these things. So that way we're not causing another fight and blow up and disconnect. So one of the first tools that's very, very important for us as parents and caregivers is self-compassion. So compassion to thyself, first and foremost, in understanding that there are things that we might not totally know about, and that's okay. Like, let's just accept that there are going to be youth that probably know more stuff about phones, AI,
okay.
and technology than we do.
Yes, yes.
That's, and so the
pretty much a given. Yeah.
So let's not have a battle about that part. But I think it's really about having that. It's not about the AI or the technology per se. We're talking about something more deeper than that. And that is about how do we talk about things that we might watch that we're confused about? What is, you know, what, how does that make us feel? We can understand feelings. I mean, that's what our benefit is as the older generations, is that we can understand feelings. We can understand when things make us feel uncomfortable.
Right.
We can understand when we feel confused, right? So that's where that experience gives us that upper hand, you know, in providing more to our youth and understanding emotional intelligence. You know, mm-hmm. it doesn't. We're not fighting about if this is right or if this is wrong in terms of how the technology, being used. Or This is an argument I have with my daughter all the time. Well, I only use the phone for this and that, and I don't want to argue about that because, of course, I can poke holes in what she's saying, mm-hmm. right? If I want to be specific, but then you're under that. If you've ever done that rabbit hole with a kid and you're doing the tit for tat, right? It's never ending. So save yourself that energy and talk about, you know, we're talking about this because not only, you know, I think, does mommy have, maybe mom has a bit of a problem with going on the phone too much. I also want to be on the phone less. I also don't like some of the things that I'm watching. And sometimes, you know what, kiddo, I actually really don't feel good about myself after being on social media. So how does that, like, do you feel the same way? Have you thought about that before? Is there things that you and I might want to do better or mm-hmm. do differently or yeah. have more fun doing,
yeah.
you know? And so that's kind of what I mean by the conversation shift.
Yeah, that's almost a realization in itself right there. Like, you're not trying to control them. You're just trying to walk with them so they understand it. Because there's no way you're going to stop technology from seeping into their lives. You just got to walk with them so they make sure that they understand it, I think, right? Mm-hmm. And I like that one question. How does that make you feel?
Mm-hmm.
Right? You're not saying, oh, you shouldn't look at that. Or, oh my gosh, I can't believe you said, wow, wow, wow. It's like, how does that make you feel?
I want you to go back to those two previous ones. You shouldn't do that. So again, everybody who's listening.
Yeah. I'm guilty of saying that.
Right?
Yeah.
Me too.
Oh, don't look at that. Oh, what are you looking at that for? Right? So immediately you're giving a negative connotation and you're making them feel bad. So you're making them feel guilty for looking at something that they didn't even know they were not supposed to look at.
Right.
Right.
Yes. I when you said it, and I, of course, I know that you're Will, but I'm putting myself in a kid's mindset, a youth's mindset. I felt ugly in my stomach.
Yeah.
You know, when you said that.
When I said it, right? After I said it, after realizing that I've said that before, and not realizing how that feels on the other side.
Right. Right. So now they're going to be looking at something to make them feel better. And that's what we're not wanting to do is to find something to make them feel better outside of themselves too. Because that's where that connection, right? If you think about substances, alcohol abuse, phone overuse.
Seeking outside validation, you know?
Yeah. So let's try to not, and I'm saying this to myself too. Let's try to not do that.
No, it's definitely, a lot of stuff when we converse, like little light bulbs go off on me as well. And I remember, it's either good or bad. Like, I remember saying that to my kid. Mm-hmm. I remember saying that to this and that, or what a person. Tonight. And then, like I just said, not realizing how it feels on the other side, right? Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, that exactly is how it rolls. So if you're not giving them comfort or validation, then they're looking elsewhere. And that's the scare. That's when it gets even more scary.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Well, and you brought me right to the next tool is, I guess it's not a tool, but something to be aware of. And the topic here is shame. Okay, but not in... not having shame, not feeding into shame, not, you know, like not feeding into that heaviness and that negativity, because both of you are not going to get anywhere when you feel shame and now your kid feels shame and now everybody's feeling ashamed of themselves. That does not create any solutions or anything positive for the family union. Yeah. So acknowledging that, because that's a heavy one with parents, you know, it's like, we feel shame and we feel like we're not doing anything right. And, you know, maybe we compare ourselves to other parents and other families who might look like they got it all together.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of times in our communities, we don't express when we're not getting things right. You know, we bottle it all up and we isolate because we don't want to be viewed as being a bad parent. You know, that's a terrible feeling to have. Never mind if it actually, you know, sometimes happens when we do make mistakes, but to feel that judgment too from people around us is not helpful, and it's definitely not healthy. You know, I maybe I'll share a little story which helped me with this whole idea of shame. Now, this happened a long time ago. My daughter was, I believe she was 2 years old. This is my first kind of interaction with understanding how to not feel shameful in my mistakes and mishaps as a parent. I I was doing my hair. I had a flat iron on, and my daughter was two, and she touched the flat iron because, you know, kids are busy, and two-year-olds definitely are grabbing everything. That's, you know. And she had burnt her finger on the flat iron, and I was so worried, and I've burnt my finger before, so I knew what kind of pain she was in. I was freaking out. So I take her to doctor's office. And, that doctor just made me feel so bad about myself. He said, what are you doing? You know, why do you have a flat iron? And I was totally taken aback. I was like, and I had to get my composure. I'm like, wait a second, we're here for my daughter's finger. Do you have, because I know that they have a spray that you can put on burns.
Oh, yeah.
And so I was like, do you have the cream or the spray or not? And you're sitting here giving me heck and my daughter's in pain. So that was that experience of needing help and hearing that negativity of I should have done this or what am I doing as a parent. I kind of spiraled a bit and I was worried about, you know, what he was going to say, what was going to happen next. Then the next day, after she was able to get some help, I told my friend about this. And my friend is kind of affluent, non-Indigenous. Some would say looks kind of privileged, acts kind of privileged.
Yeah.
And I told her this story about how I felt so bad about myself. And now I have a stomach ache and I'm worried if, you know, CPS is going to be called because of this, right? And as an Indigenous person, that's a reality.
Yeah, that is.
And she said, what? What do you mean that's what your doctor said? She's like, do you know how many times my kids have burnt their fingers on curling irons and touching a hot stove because they weren't listening and all of this stuff? And I was like, huh? Like, that's your reality? Okay. She's like, don't even worry about it. Like, that's just crazy. She'd never heard of that before.
Yeah.
And we need a little bit of the racism card, but it helped me to see like, wow, okay, so I'm normal. I'm normal.
Oh, okay.
This is normal.
Yeah.
This happens. Accidents happen. It doesn't make you a bad parent. And I was able to take some of that energy that she had about, you know, like my kid, her kids probably don't remember, you know, burning their finger. But it helped me to see like, yeah, that shame didn't help anything in terms of me being a better parent. You know, instead I disconnected and I felt very ashamed of myself and, you know, just, you know, wasn't able to be present, any more present with my daughter. You know, because I'm just replaying the thing in my head, right, of the negativity. So shame is not helpful. Finding ways to share our experiences as parents, whether they're good or bad. And the other thing that's important to remember is that, in some ways, we think that people are less qualified because they've struggled. Right. I think I might be saying this backwards, but I'll try the other way.
Or because they didn't struggle.
Well, sometimes it's right. Like if somebody does something perfect, right, and they give that maybe that perception that they've never had a problem in their life, you know, and then we're like, oh, you must know exactly what you're doing because you've never struggled with it. Like you've just made it through life and stepped across all of these different barriers and you didn't even break a sweat. Right. So sometimes we amplify those types of experiences, whereas in reality and maybe in a more traditional aspect, but we forget this. People that have experienced things and have made mistakes and have gone through the trenches, you know, they have a really good understanding of the situation at hand. So it's like a difference of like learned and lived experience and maybe like textbook knowledge is maybe what I'm trying to portray there in the difference.
It's always surprising when you have different views, like you have an indigenous view and then you have your non-indigenous people say, what? That's not the way it is in my world. And you go, open your eyes. Welcome to my world. Hey, we're going to take two. We're talking about the new adolescents and how to communicate and how to keep in touch with these kids as they roll along. We're back in two.
Thank you.